I'd like to call the meeting, resource meeting, together this time to order. With us today, Representative Ringstad, Representative Larson, Representative Bussel, Representative Gall, Representative Calgary, Representative Ewing, myself, Representative Schultz. It's 3:05, February 25th, 1983. Two members have notified me that they're absent, Representative Vasquez and Representative Liska. They would be absent. We've got with us today in the audience, Bob Hinman and Ron Somerville. They may be testifying on the bills today. The two bills we're going to be hearing, House Bill 187 and 188. The first bill that we're going to be hearing is House Bill 188, an act relating to the big game hunting by non-residents. And I would at this time like to ask the sponsor of the bill to give us his testimony on this particular piece of legislation.
Thank you. Basically, the intent of this legislation is just to do some cleanup of what a lot of people have assumed was already on the books. Currently, in order for a non-resident to hunt for brown bear, grizzly bear, polar bear, and sheep, they need to be accompanied by a guide or a relative of the second degree of kindred who is an Alaskan resident. The part that was left out on a lot of these was in their second degree of kindred, and it was suggested that we change it and put it second degree of kindred by blood or marriage. And the or marriage part just would include the in-laws, so that on the sheet that's in the file there, it you can have your in-laws come up and go out hunting with you without requiring the guide. The bill, the way it's physically written, is to repeal and reenact. And what our legal people did is restructure the A, B, C, and the 1, 2, 3 part, but the only real change is where it says by marriage, there on line 19. Is the only change in the existing statute. They just wrote it in a different outline form. There has been a question posed in our listing of which relatives are included. Now, we had asked our legal people across the street to give us a list of who is included currently and who would be included under the law if this bill is passed, and they gave us the list on this bill analysis sheet here. However, Representative Larson was just pointing out that in the State Affairs Committee, they were giving a different definition, or giving different options for that definition. So at this point, I'm questioning what their actual definition is, and maybe we should take a further look into that. But basically, that is the intent of the bill. Most of the people that I have spoken with have been under the assumption that was the intent of the law all along, and you could legally do that. My guess is that most of the in-laws that wanted to come up and go hunting have gone out and done it anyway, assuming that that was legal. So I really don't see where this is going to have much of an effect. It's one of those things that it might make people that are already doing it legal rather than being illegal and not knowing about it. I've talked with a couple of guides, and they have indicated to me that they don't feel that it'd have an effect on the guiding business at all, because there won't be any significant number of people. Basically, I think I'll leave it at that and let the witnesses testify on and get there and put out the this point, then we can answer questions.
Just a point of clarification, Mr. Chairman. I think what the way you'd explained it earlier to me was that if it was like a brother that came, you know, was a brother that came up or something like that, then if it was a brother-in-law, it would allow the brother-in-law to participate in the hunting activities.
Correct. At this point, Mr. Chairman, at this point, if I had a brother who was not a resident, he could come up and hunt with me. However, if I've got a brother-in-law that's not a resident, they can come up, my brother-in-law and a sister were to come up, sister could hunt with me, and the brother-in-law couldn't. Same way on the other basis, that if I had a wife whose brother was not a resident, he could come up and hunt with her, he could not come up and hunt with me.
Okay, we have testimony now from Bob Hinman, Department of Fish and Game. Bob, you state your name and organization with.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bob Hinman, Deputy Director, Acting Director of Division of Game. The department's position on this bill is neutral, and my only comments or reason for showing up here is just to answer questions. Certainly they have no objection to this legislation.
Yes.
Mr. Hinman, do you know, or do you have with you a list of how the Fish and Game regulations now list second degree akinda? Is there a definition in there that would differ from what our attorneys gave us?
Mr. Chairman, I'd have to try to recite it from memory. We do have it in regulations, and I'm not sure I could do it. Would be of the person you're talking about, his father, mother, his son or daughter, grandfather, grandmother, grandson, granddaughter relationship would not include, under the present definition, anyone related by blood. Or by marriage, I'm sorry. Excuse
me. That way you currently have it is done in regulation. Strictly Fish and Game regulation.
That's yes, sir.
It was drafted out of
that
the
is
department.
In, that is in 580C.
Further questions? Any further questions? Yes,
yeah, I'd like to address questions, Mr. Hinman here. Bob, I think you can recall several years ago, and I know Ron Somerville was in the Fish and Game South Central District at that time. Why sheep got on there in the first place was because, if you recall, we had an incident in the Wrangell Mountains where we had a non-resident running around up in the mountains up there and fell in a crevasse up there and was lost. And the way this pertains to us in this particular issue, Mr. Chairman, is that most of us have hunted in Alaska. We've been up here a few years. And we know the dangers experienced up here. I'm sure that Mr. Ringstead, myself, and most of us could guide our next of kin to just about as good as a guide could. So that's why sheep was entered on that. For many years, it was never entered on as the list that required a guide. So I think it's a good section that having this in here that at least it gives an opportunity to hunt, so to speak, our kindred or blood kin or what have you. That it gives Alaskans a break, is the way I look at it.
Okay, if there are no additional questions from Mr. Hinman, thank you very much for coming in and testifying. Appreciate it. Next person, Ron Somerville, and he's here to testify.
Thank
Interior
you,
Wildlife.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ron Somerville. Lim Junior, I'm representing Interior Wildlife Association and also as legislative chairman for the Alaska Sportsman Council. They asked me to just comment briefly on this, and they haven't taken a position for or against it, but I think pretty well pointing out that some of the misconceptions, as Representative Ringstad has indicated, of people feeling that they could probably do that anyway, has been occurring. I'm sure everybody's aware of certain cases where they've been understood it was that way. One thing they wanted me to point out was there was some concern for how many additional non-residents might be allowed to hunt when we were talking about taking additional steps to possibly restrict non-residents. So not that it would be sway you one way or the other, but there was some concern for you will be allowing probably some increase in non-resident hunting. It may be negligible. I don't think there's any fact or figures on how many are next of kin that we have. That's all I have.
Good question.
Yes, sir. When you say increase in non-resident hunting, would it be because they wouldn't be required to hire a guide, and so it would be less expensive, they'd be able to hunt?
Yes, I think there are a number of people, Representative Gall, that don't hunt right now. Particularly, you see, you get military people up here who have to wait the full year, and or other people you know that don't take their next of kin because they are not legally covered because there's a marriage relationship rather than a blood relationship, that they probably would take him out if they had the opportunity. And I don't know how many of these.
I'm sorry, I don't quite understand that now.
Well, right now, if you can't go out because you're a brother-in-law to somebody, as was pointed out, that they probably would take them out if they were legally covered under the law.
You're saying that among that group are military personnel?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. And Interior Wildlife, could you tell me what that organization is?
Interior Wildlife Association in Fairbanks, a group made up of trappers and sportsmen in that area. I'm not lobbying for them.
Could you tell me a little bit about the intent of that organization so I'll understand?
I don't know the bylaws of the organization. It's primarily just a trappers group and a sportsman group in Fairbanks. In fact, there's about three or four of them in Fairbanks. That's one of them that's been fairly active. Some of the other members might have more knowledge about their background than I do.
No, that's fine. Thank you very much, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I understand, though, this is just to take it out, if they were a non-resident, they would still require licensing.
Oh, yes.
You know, to buy the appropriate license to fit the situation, I would assume.
That's
just
correct.
A matter of...
Just avoiding having to go out with a guide.
The touring of them or whatever. Thank you.
Any additional questions?
Clarification on this, Mr. Chairman. Ron, this would mean that our brother-in-law or what have you, I don't tend to hunt sheep anymore. I get too old to climb those mountains. But it still would require my brother-in-law, for example, to buy the big game tag. For sheep, I think it's about $150 now, isn't it? Something like that.
That's
and a non-resident license, but he wouldn't have to pay the expense of a guide. That's actually what they're leading in. Thank you.
Hey, no additional questions. Thank you very much. Sounds good coming in. Yes.
We had a similar situation. I think I talked to the sponsor here that in state affairs addressing nepotism, and we got a ruling that we might you might like to review before.
I think that's what this is right here, Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Yes.
This is a memo to Chairman of the State Affairs Committee from our legal counsel, Lynn Asper, discussing nepotism, but in the degrees of kindred. It says that first degree of kindred to a person includes the parents and children of that person. Second degree includes brothers, sisters, grandparents, and grandchildren. Third degree includes nephews, nieces, aunts, and uncles. It says in the proposed CS HB 49, which is the nepotism bill that the committee was referring to, aunts and uncles are included within the definition of second degree of kindred, although they would be normally considered to be third degree of kindred. So in this one condition, it would appear to me that they're being put into a different category, and I, from this point, I'm not sure what the intent of the other committee is to do, but it goes on to say, it should be pointed out that since the definition of second degree of kindred is the proposed CSHB 49 only applies to the section in which it appears. So my understanding that even if this Bill 49 would pass, it would still only apply to that section in which it appears. So it would not necessarily apply here. So from that, my understanding would be that this list definitions that they provided us earlier would be proper.
No, I just, it was only a suggestion. I wasn't aware that he had that.
Mr. Chairman, okay, this is in our fish and game regulations here. Second degree of kindred is defined as means the relatives who are parents, grandparents, children, grandchildren, sisters, or brothers of the person acting as the guide. So what the by marriage would do would be just to allow the in-laws there. That is my understanding at this point. What I might suggest that we do would be with the other idea here, go back and answer some of the questions on the legal position of this, if we want to adjust that the way they are adjusting it here. They're going to adjust it to include some of the members of the third degree of kindred here, and find out some of the rationale behind that so we are consistent a little bit more. I would suggest that we hold the bill over and take a look at that and answer that, and we can bring it back up when we have the answer from that.
So you prefer to, okay. Is there any other testimony on this particular bill? If not, we will be holding this bill over and for additional clarification. The next bill we're going to be hearing is House Bill 187, and the sole intent is to do exactly that. Your testimony on this particular piece of legislation. So, if the sponsor of this bill, Representative Ringstad, would you like to give
Thank
us
you.
The
187 is a piece of legislation that I was asked to submit by the fur farmers. I was surprised there's more of them in the state than I thought there was. But they've been running into some problems the last couple of years because they've been under the direction or the supervision of three different departments, and they kind of feel like they're the unwanted stepchild. And their intent here is that they be put into one location, preferably Division of Agriculture under DNR. They feel that they are raising animals for furs just like some people raise animals for beef, and that's an agriculture program, and it's not necessarily equivalent to trapping. It's not necessarily equivalent to environmental conservation either. So in going down the bill, I'll just run through the sectional analysis here. The first section of the bill, I think you all have before you there a bill and a sectional analysis. The first section of the bill puts fur farming under the Department of Natural Resources and defines it. The second section of the bill eliminates the a fee of $100 that is currently required by Fish and Game. The third section allows the commissioner of Fish and Game to issue a permit so that the fur farmers can go out and collect animals. What they will do is periodically, like if they're raising foxes, they will periodically go out, trap a live fox and use that to breed in with their stock. That is something where that, again, gets into the trapping section, and under that section, they will be dealing with Fish and Game, but the commissioner will be authorized to issue them those permits. There are specific uses stated in here, so they're not just going out trapping.
A point of information, please.
Could you tell me, thank you, Mr. Chairman, could you point out to me where it refers to the Department of Natural Resources in this bill? I'm sorry, I just don't see it here.
Under, in section 3, AS 1605-340B is dealing with Fish and Game.
And what is the current?
Yes.
In the statute, 0305-110B presents the authority for the Department of Resources. And at the bottom of the bill, you'll see under section 4, 305-110C6, is the Department of Environmental Conservation's authority. So what you're doing basically is taking it out of the auspices of DEC, and in section 1, putting it under the auspices of DNR. And it's just within the same statute, it's just a matter of establishing who is going to have the purview over.
Could you show me that, please? I don't have any of that here in this package.
Well, he's pulling that. Let me go through and go through the rest of this. I've been trying to work with the fur farmers on this, and there will be a sponsor substitute coming out. There's a rough draft of it in the file, and that still needs some additional changes. The intent is the same. It's some of the wording that is going to be changed to try and clean it up a little bit and help out. There's a couple of things that are causing them problems, and what they're trying to do is just get back to where they don't have to fight all the rules, regulations, and bureaucracy. They can do a basic set of regulations, abide by those, and go out and try and make money at a business. That's the intent. And what I hope to do is, sometime in the relatively near future, have this sponsor substitute ready to go, and then bring that back before the committee to move out. But at this point, I was intending to get the subject before the committee so they can take a look at it. If there are any ideas, get some initial testimony on it, and use that input to come back with drafting a sponsor substitute.
Representative Ewing.
Yes. So what's the reason for deleting the $100 fee right now? It's just because of
the $100 fee. Is one that they are charged. If I remember, I'm trying to remember which regulations were. I think that's the one that they are charged $100 fee for going out and drafting to try and. Okay.
Representative Bustle, if I may, just excuse me just a second. We do have a person to testify here, and maybe some of those questions will be can be answered by him. Representative Bustle, go ahead.
Okay, I don't think he's going to answer this. I just looked at the, I guess this is the long bill we have is a suggested sponsor substitute, and I have a little problem with this language. Is issue a permit on, I guess we're down on line 21 or 22 there, the collecting of wild fur animals in accordance with sustained yield management practices for the improving of genetic stock of fur farming animals. Does that mean there's no limit on how many the guy can go out and take to do whatever he wants to do?
Representative Brinkstead.
No, on the idea there is that the commissioner of Fish and Game will allow him to do that. He will come through with the regulations, just like right now, they tell you how many fox you can go out and trap, how many moose you can go out and shoot. That will be set out, there'll be times, places you can and can't do it, but that will be done through the regulations of the commissioner. This is just to allow the commissioner to do that.
At this time, I'd like to call forth a...
Answer Representative Gall's question?
Yes. Okay. Go ahead, Representative Ringstad.
Representative Gall, on the $100, now it shows here in two different places, just so I have them straight. On line 15, yeah, talking about $100 fee there. Now, at this point, the fur farmers have to buy a license to be a fur farmer that costs them $100. They buy a business license, then they go buy another hot license to be a fur farmer, costs them $100. Down on the bottom, you'll see a section in here where we're lining out the figure $100, which is the annual fee for the permit for collecting wild animals, is the same as a fee for resident trappers. Now, a trapper wants to go out and trap fur animals for the... In trapping, it costs them a $3 license, I think it is. Whereas for a fur farmer to go out and trap an animal, he had to pay $100. So it's two different places where $100 shows up there.
I would at this time like to have Bob Hinman come up and testify. And at this time, I think there may be some questions that after he's done testifying, you may have some questions there, and he may be able to clarify some things for you. Could you give your name?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, my name is Bob Hinman, Deputy Director, Acting Director of the Division of Game. The Department of Fish and Game rather strongly favors the intent of this legislation. As it's presently written, it has two basic thrusts. I guess this is reiterating something of what the sponsor has mentioned. One is shifting the responsibility for fur farm industry control from DEC to DNR, and secondly, reducing the amount that person must pay for a permit to capture wild fur animals from the wild and reduce them to captivity for fur farming purposes. That really is all that at least the initial draft of the bill does. To address again that question of the $100, I believe, if I recall correctly, looking at the legal analysis that was done on the whole array of fur farm problems, animal possession problems, and the confusion between DNR, DEC, and Fish and Game by the Attorney General's office, she noted in that legal opinion that the legislature already had taken the action to do away with the $100 fur farming license, but for some reason it still appeared in the statutes. So it would be my opinion that deletion in line 15 merely does what the legislature already has done or intended to do. The other than main difference is that the permit fee for collecting these animals by this legislation would be reduced from $100 to $3. While normally I get all excited about anything that reduces the amount of money coming into the Fish and Game Fund, and these funds do go into the Fish and Game Fund, this one doesn't excite me a bit because, frankly, gentlemen, we only issue perhaps an average of 2 permits per year, if that. No more than 2 permits per year have been issued by our department for collecting fur animals for fur farming purposes. I greatly appreciate the language in line 22, which gives a purpose for which this collection is to be done, and I think keeps us out of some problem where, frankly, some people may want to collect the darn things for pets or whatever, and this makes it very specific as to what the intent of the legislature is. The other suggestion I might have is that in line 20, I question the addition there of the word research, and perhaps the new language, the newly amended draft bill may have that changed already, I don't know. In line 20, you have the word research, which would apply to the word scientific, but also to propagated and educational, and I don't believe that it really applies or should apply to, you're not talking about propagated research or educational research when it, you're talking about the general types of permits that the department issues, and the commissioner issues. So I would suggest there that that should remain for scientific, propagated, or educational purposes. My other comment is fairly general, and that is that we have shared at least one thing with the fur farmers, and that is extreme frustration over the overlapping confusion and contradiction between the statutes relating to fur farming and the whole subject of control of wild or live animals. And there are rather severe problems. Up until just a few years ago, it was assumed that the Department of Fish and Game had authority for controlling fur farming. We did issue permits and so on. And then it was pointed out to us by the Attorney General's office that no, indeed, DNR had control. Shortly thereafter, an executive order moved that function to DEC, where it presently resides, but yet the department has certain authorities and DNR has certain authorities, all related to the same subject. So any legislation that will clear this up and make it not only clear for the public, but also for us that attempt to administer these things would be greatly welcomed. I did make a copy of this legal opinion by the Attorney General's office on this subject available to the staff, and perhaps I hope that some of the problems that were brought up by the AG's office in this whole matter might be taken into account in the redraft of the legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Mr. Representative Bussell, did he seem to answer your question, or you still have one?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, he didn't. You know, I don't care whether I read the bill or whether I read the sponsor substitute here. It I guess the other difference is that in the sponsor substitute here, you've taken the word may out and put the commissioner shall issue a permit for the collecting of wild fur animals in accordance with sustained yield practices and for improving genetic stock. You know, that language means you can go out and catch as many as you want to if you're running a fur farm to improve your stock. If you wanted everyone that's out there, you could go get them. There's, you're doing absolutely nothing to set any kind of limits on it. The fur farmer, if there's 16 out there and he says, I need them all to improve my genetic stock, he can go in. The commissioner shall give him a permit to go do it.
May I'd just like to direct budget. Is there anything that would answer that as far as when the permit is issued as to the number of flocks that the person may be requesting the permit for?
Mr. Chairman, no, there is not at the present time, although as long as the statute says may, then I presume that leaves the commissioner the authority to set reasonable standards. I have not seen this particular draft, Representative Bussell, so I couldn't comment on that directly, but if the word may is taken out, that is making it non-discretionary by the commissioner, then I would favor having some language in the legislation that made it clear that the commissioner could limit the species taken, at any rate, if not the number.
Do you have a follow-up on that, Representative Bussell?
Yeah, if you're going to do this, I can totally understand what you're trying to do, but the language of the bill, as long as we're here just getting language, if you're going to talk about sustained yields in the natural element, then you got to say sustained yields in the natural element. And if it falls below what the commissioner determines sustained yields in the natural element are, the fur farmer will have to go without. And it seems to me like you have to say that. You can't, obviously, everybody sitting at this table has been playing with it, it's the obvious intent. But if I had $1 million in a fur farm out here and throwing some more wild fur in was gonna up my pelt value, obviously I'd read it the way I just got through telling you. You need to restrict it. None of this legislation is written for the honest guy. It's all written for the guy that wants to circumvent the law. And this kind of language is so vague that we can run right around it. We just will not have it at all.
Representative Ringstead.
Mr. Hinman, would it be a better way to write this to say that the intent of the may to shall, the concern of the fur farmers there was if you say may, and they can, he can, Commissioner Mayton never just flat always tell them no. Would it help to say the commissioner shall issue the permit and regulate, which would imply that the commissioner will regulate this thing, but you just can't flat across the board make a policy say there will never be permits. Maybe by comparison, we ought to take a look at some of the other regulations of the Fish and Game Commissioner. Does it state that the commissioner will issue hunting licenses or may issue hunting licenses? Something like that. Although you issue a hunting license, you also regulate when, where, and how you do it. That is what the intent is trying to get to. It's assumed that the commissioner will regulate it, but the commissioner also, the intent is, would be that the commissioner will be issuing these permits so that they can do it. Do you have a suggestion of how we want to do that?
Mr. Chairman?
I'll yield.
I was just going to suggest that if it, and I can understand the concern perhaps for the made a shell on part of your constituents, Representative Ringstead, although I would point out that most of the authorities granted the commissioner in the issuance of permits, for example, in under B, which is the major, starting line 17, is a major authority for issuing permits for control or possession and taking of animals other than sport. It is May, and there hasn't been any problem with that. It does allow the commissioner to provide reasonable controls. But if the legislature wishes to retain shall in there, then I would suggest that adding to that sentence, perhaps beginning in the middle of line 25 after the deletion, wherever it goes, something to the effect, however the commissioner may determine areas, numbers, and species to be so taken.
Representative Gall, you have a question?
Yes, sir. On the last part of this, section 4, it repeals, it says AS 0305-0110-C6. That means C6 only, or the entire, it just means that sixth item here under C, is that correct?
Yeah, see it.
All right, now that reads regulation of fur animals except as specified for purposes of this paragraph. Fur farming means the raising of animals in captivity for the purpose of marketing their fur, and domestic fur animal means a fur animal born and raised in captivity. And why is that being repealed? I wonder if one of you, either Mr. Ringstead or you, sir, could explain that to me. It seems like a pretty responsible part of that law.
Mr. Chairman, it was my impression, although I haven't really cross-researched that, and really I'm only even a halfway expert in Title 16, not in the other titles, but it was my impression that that was just merely removing it from one and placing it in another. Now, why the same wording doesn't occur elsewhere, I don't know. I thought it was taking it out of the jurisdiction of DEC and putting it under the jurisdiction of DNR.
Going back to that for a minute, may I continue, sir? Do I understand that it's the position of DNR that you wish to be responsible for standards and labeling requirements pertaining to the sale of meat, fish, and poultry, establishment of quarantines for eradication of pests, examination and inspection of premises, products and articles and commodities carrying pests, and so on and so forth? These all seem quite far from your normal purview. Tests and analysis which may be made and hearings which may be held to determine whether the commissioner shall issue a stop order or quarantine. Is the department actually wishing to undertake these?
Chairman, I think the commissioner of DNR would be rather unhappy if I could try to represent him. I'm with the Department of Fish and Game, and I have no idea what...
Well, am I correct that you stay the Department of Natural Resources?
Right, he's representing Fish and Game.
Well, maybe I could ask you then, sir, what does the Department of Natural Resources have to do with such activities?
Representative Richardson.
The intent of the bill is that fur farming is a farming activity. Farming comes under the Division of Agriculture, which comes under the Department of Natural Resources. Let me try and answer your question earlier on the definition here. Remember, I think the way you were reading it, you were talking about domestic animals and not as opposed to the way it's defined here. The problem is what you get into is domestic animals. And you get into the definitions and they list specific things here and there and what have you. Their definitions of what you can use, what you can't use as domesticated animals is something that's giving the fur farmers a problem. This is saying they don't care if the animal is a domestic animal or not domestic animal. What they're concerned with is the intent of what a fur farmer is doing. They're raising it to market the furs. And that is more why, how they're trying to get fur farming and saying, what is fur farming? Fur farming is raising animals for furs.
I guess my question, sir, is this. If they're farming, in the common sense of the word, they're not going out and capturing wild animals and keeping them in captivity and reselling them. That's not farming, in my view. Farming is where, in fact, they are breeding those animals, and then they're selling them. Yet that reference to, which is in Section C6, is deleted, and there's really nothing in here that I see that relates to fur farming. This seems to relate to the capturing of wild animals for commercial purposes, which is hardly my understanding of farming, so I'm a bit concerned here.
What you have to do is put the different sections of the bill into different contexts of the law and where they belong. The section down here where it's dealing with capturing wild animals is a section dealing with fish and game. The section 1 is defining it as dealing with natural resources. The intent of what the fur farmers will do is periodically go out and say, if you're raising foxes, you'll go out and capture one fox this winter and bring it back and put that in with your group of foxes for purposes of breeding to try and bring in some new genetics into your herd or flock or whatever they call foxes. They don't necessarily go out and capture foxes to sell. What they do, and that's why it's stated here for the specific purposes of what they're using the foxes for, or the furs for. They capture one or two specifically to come back, put them in with the ones they already domestically have to try and improve their gene pool in that and put out a better product. So that realistically they would be taking very, very few wild ones. Most of what they will have is domestic, with periodically, one or two bring in.
Representative
Ewing. It does, yes, somewhat.
Representative Ewing, a point of clarification.
Yeah, just here, just thinking of this a little bit more in depth, Mr. Hinman. Now, what we've got is two situations. We have a license. They have to go and get a license, correct? A fur farmer has to get a license, and they also have to pay, as the law stands now, a $100 fee. Through which department?
Mr. Chairman. At the present time, licenses, of course, are issued by the Department of Revenue.
I see.
We have nothing to do with that. And it is my understanding that at the present time, regardless of what the statute says here, because of action taken elsewhere or previously, the Department of Revenue is issuing per firm licenses free. But there is a license involved.
I see.